Right now, we have Representative Heron coming online. I see him flashing up right now. So we are going to be going into an interview with Representative Heron. Mr. Heron, are you online?
Yes, Austin. This is Bob.
Hey, Bob. Thank you so much for tuning in. Again, I'm just going to go ahead and introduce you right now. We are on the air. This is House Representative Bob Heron. He represents the Aleutians East Borough, along with a very other large and diverse district in the state of Alaska's House of Representatives. Thank you so much for coming on the air with us today, sir.
You bet.
Well, so we're about to get going with the legislative session. I believe it opens up sometime, is it January 21st this year that it's going to begin?
That's correct.
Okay, so we'll be going there. We just wanted to get you on the air and give you really an opportunity and a platform to share. Just kind of the first thing I want to ask, what are your priorities coming up here in this session? We have a lot of things that are really swirling around in the political sphere, a lot of anger or just questions even about the budget shortfall and things like that. As you go into this next upcoming session, what are going to be your priorities?
Well, you know, there's, of course, a lot of people asking for things that they need all around the district, all around the state. And Western Alaska is no different than that. And so the governor has put a couple of projects in for House District 37 in Western Alaska. But that doesn't mean that there are many other pressing needs throughout the region. The region that I represent because of redistricting is 1,700 miles long, with Bethel being the northernmost. Then you go out to Mokoriak, Nunavak Island, then the Pribilofs, and then out to the end of the Aleutian chain, all the way back up to Togiak, and then up to Quinnahawk. So a lot of different communities that are very remote and isolated, and so they have to have all their own infrastructures. They can't be dependent like in South Central in the Anchorage Mat Valley, where they have ways to complement each other. So I guess the priority is to protect state jobs. They should cut the budget in urban areas that have a lot more flexibility. So it's just going to be a challenge to work with other rural legislators on protecting the bush.
Yeah, that's going to be obviously the big question. Because with the budget shortfall, for people who don't know a little bit of the background, the idea here is that with the recent reform that came in with the oil taxes, we are now going to see, I believe, is about a $2 billion shortfall in our budget.
Well, that's I think that is a good guesstimate, a good guess, is that then now they're predicting that the price of oil over the next fiscal year is going to be about $5 less than they predicted in the spring. Of course, the legislature and the governor will look forward to the spring forecast of 2014, and maybe that number will be a little higher and we can breathe a little easier, or it could even be worse. And so that's what we're going to be watching. Of course, Senate Bill 21 that reformed oil taxes, that is an immediate drop starting January 1. The first 6 months of the current fiscal year were not under the new oil tax laws. Mm. And so it's going to be a shortfall, and the governor's admitted that they're going to have to go into the savings to smooth out that deficit. And so we have about $17 billion in both of the statutory your budget reserve and the constitutional budget reserve. But, you know, you start dipping into it, you got to be careful.
Yeah.
It'd be like your household. Say if there was two people in your household that were making money and one of them lost their job for whatever reason. So what do? You cut back all discretionary income, you pay the mortgage, you pay the heat, you feed the kids, you do the basics. But what you should do is not just use your savings account, because a savings account is for things when they're really is a real large emergency. And so I think that's what the state's got to do, is it's got to cut back discretionary income. Don't unnecessarily impact one region more than another region. And we should probably be real careful about dipping into any savings accounts.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, the household comparison, it seems to work really well in this kind of situation. Did you feel like that the idea behind, because I know the tax reforms wasn't necessarily a bipartisan idea, did you feel like there was a need to do something in order to create new exploration for oil?
Yes, I believe so. You know, we want to get more oil in the pipeline because that's 90% of our revenue stream.
Yeah.
But I voted against Senate Bill 21 because it was too much too fast. I suggested, and a lot of people agreed, but we didn't have the numbers, is that we should have did a slide into an oil tax. And my suggestion was, is the first year we would change the law by 25% less revenue. Then the following year, maybe increase it to 50. Then the third year, maybe increase it to 66. And then a larger number after that. So we would gradually go into the water, so to speak. But no, there was too many people that we had to do it now. You know, I mean, I'm being sort of make a tongue-in-cheek comment here, but, you know, we had to help out the quote-unquote poor oil companies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So there wasn't an opportunity for you guys to get this sliding in now, but with the public being maybe a little bit more aware of the situation, I know on the upcoming ballot there's going to be an opportunity for people to vote to repeal this measure. What do you see as the House and the Senate, or the legislature in general's plan of attack coming up here? You know, are you guys going to be able to repeal this in time for the budgeting? We're just going to have to take the shortfall this year, or how are you guys going to approach this next year?
Well, there's two schools of thought. It passed. Granted, in the House, it was a larger margin, where in the Senate, it was a real close margin. I don't think the legislature, especially in election year, is going to revisit oil taxes. In fact, there's probably going to be a conversation about gas tax certainty. So, but going back to oil tax is that, no, I don't think we're going to do anything. And that since the referendum was successful in getting on the ballot, you know, people will say, well, let's let the citizens of Alaska decide this. Mm-hmm. And so what you're going to have is, you know, already the big three and people that support the big oil companies, they're spending a lot of money. Months, you know, literally 11 months before the election, they're spending hundreds of thousands of dollars to convince people that the repeal is wrong. Mm-hmm. And the people that want the repeal won't enjoy as much money for advertising. So I think it's, you know, whether it's you or me or our friends and neighbors, is they got to look at it and say, does the oil tax help me in the short term and the long term? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I just thought the Senate Bill 21 was too much too fast. And I'm going to be voting to repeal so that we can have the conversation again, knowing full well that there's going to be a lot of people that completely disagree with me.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate your stance on it, you know, being that we do need to do something, because either way you look at it, the way that the oil is dropping through the pipeline, you know, we're going to need to address this topic, and eventually you're going to have to start dipping into savings. Either way, unless you know, if you had slid in, maybe you could have avoided it much more clearly. I was looking at a report earlier today, and I just kind of want to stay really quickly a little bit more on the topic of the budget, if you don't mind. I saw that from 2005 to 2011, state spending has gone up in the budget from about $7,500 to about $12,000 per capita, or from $5 billion, I think, total to about $8.1 billion, and that was from 2005 to 2011. So that's about an 80% increase in the budget. Now, do you feel like maybe it's time to kind of start dialing down the budget a little bit? I mean, that's a pretty large increase in a relatively short amount of time.
Well, we're going to have to do it. I mean, we're going to have less revenue. And so even though we're going to use part of our savings to bridge across this divide, this deficit divide, is that there is going to be significant cuts to the operating budget out of just because we don't want to spend it all in a couple of years. And so unfortunately, there will be significant cuts. And like I said earlier in the conversation, the urban parts of the state can absorb these state cuts far easier than the Bush can, because you take one state of employee out of any community, that's a huge hit. But if you were to take 10 state employees out of Anchorage, they wouldn't even notice it. So it's going to be quite the conversation between legislators and the governor.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we're looking forward to seeing what happens, and we really appreciate you representing us and being there for that conversation, and we hope it goes well. Me and my one of the people in my office today, we were looking through the new House districting. I'm sure you've had a chance to take a look. They have some new redistricting because obviously the last job that they did redistricting for House and Senate didn't go over very well with most people. And you got quite an interesting district out of the deal. And now when we're looking at the new one, it appears we are going to be going back to Bryce Edgemond, or his district at least, correct?
Yeah, that's right. Is that in the plan that went out, the 2012 plan, they stripped all the villages that are directly dependent on Bethel. So all the villages around Bethel went to Rice, who, of course, when he had been representing the peninsula, the chain, and the islands. Now they're going to switch it. Basically, it's just going to flop back. Is Rice will have the Bristol Bay area, the peninsula, the chain, and the islands, whereas I will have all my original villages, 24 of them, return to a compact district that makes social and economic sense. And then I pick up five new villages, three on the Kuskokwim and two on the Yukon. So it will be back to way it should be, is contiguous, compact, and socially and economically connected. And the gov I mean not the the judge approved that plan right now. So I guess that's where we're going to be at in November of 2014. People will be voting for candidates that live much closer to them.
Yeah, so I'm sure you're excited about the change. It makes a lot more sense, like you said, economically to have you in the place that you were. What were some of the challenges that you had though with this change? Coming into a new district that you probably knew something about, but it's not your it wasn't your district, and you had to come in here and learn about new issues and new people. And what were some of the big challenges that you faced just handling this?
Well, the learning curve, but the islands and the chain and the peninsula are, it's a obviously it's a mysterious place. It's fascinating. I tried twice to get to St. Paul and always got weathered out. I was able to go to Adak, Atka, King Cove, Cold Bay, Unalaska, Accoon, several other communities that are easier to get to in that district. But no, I enjoyed it because I got to learn new issues, and I met some really great people from all around. Pat Politnikov from St. George, I get along great with him. Mayor Shirley out of Unalaska, the guys out in Adak were super. We just My wife and I, we enjoyed the we're still enjoying our relationship with new friends and new communities. And yeah, it's not it's sort of sad that it changes back so quickly. But at the same time, this first year has just been a great visit and a great opportunity for me and my family.
Oh. Well, I'm glad to hear that. It was an interesting change in just how quickly it happened, and now that it appears that it will be going back. And like you said, Judge did approve the new districts, and you will be going back to the Bethel region, and we'll be having Bryce Enderman's district back together.
Yeah, but the thing about it is Lyman has been representing the regions, the Aleutians, the Islands, and the Bethel area for since 1992, and so there's no interruption in service for the South Bering Sea by your senator, so it worked out great, I think.
Yeah, and that's I was noticing that too, is that Senator Hoffman's been able to stay on board pretty well through the transition and all this with the Bethel area, it seems, and so that was good, and we hope to have him on here soon as well. Well, we'd like to give you an opportunity. As I said before, a lot of this is a chance for you, just kind of because, you know, we're still learning about who you are and experiencing, you know, you as our representative. What are some of the things that you would like to see happen out here that you've noticed in your visits?
Well, I think it's just the realization that the South Bering Sea is key to obviously fishing, but it's going to be key to the Arctic. With the Arctic opening up more and more, the more traffic that we're going to see going through Unimak Pass and then down out through the Great Circle route, looks like fishing is going to be have a strong position for years to come. And then, of course, it's just the challenge of the Bering Sea and how it relates to the Arctic. The Arctic is changing. Infrastructure is going to be needed. Of course, as you know, St. Paul has a seasonal refuge for boats. Dutch is going to be a year-round refuge, and we're going to have to build something up in the Bering Straits section of the state, whether we put in a Coast Guard hangar up there so they can have a C-130 in that region. We're going to have a safe harbor, safe refuge in this Bering Strait area. But again, you know, just the change in the Arctic is going to have potential benefits that are very large for St. Paul and all the South Bering Sea communities. But at the same time, there's going to be increased risks that we're going to have to try to minimize as best we can. So I just think that it's where there's changes, there's opportunities, and we just got to figure out collectively how to take advantage of those potential benefits.
Yeah, so you do see that the Arctic's going to be a future area of growth. Obviously, other countries like Russia and Norway are moving forward with that. And Shell's had a hard time. They're the ones who have been really kind of taking the initiative to go out there and do some drilling on offshore platforms, but they've had a struggle. Where do you see that going?
It's gonna take a while. I don't see it I didn't see it 2012 as a failure for Shell. I just saw it as a successful attempt, and they learned quite a bit. We all did. But the potential for any kind of exploration and then maybe production in the future, it's all about how it benefits communities in the Bering Sea and communities in the northern part of the state. That's what it's all about. And hopefully we can take advantage of all those benefits. And you mentioned Russia, but, you know, Russia, that's their attitude toward the Arctic, is it's going to help their northern communities. And what we do over on this side of the dateline really is not going to impact them. They're going to go forward. And so shipping through the Eastern Bering Sea in relation to us is the Western Bering Sea on the other side of the dateline is going to be very important to them, but a lot of potential for us.
Yeah, it is exciting times. You know, obviously there's a lot of concern about the fact that the Arctic is opening up so well, but it is very exciting in the opportunities it reaches. Now, one thing I was wondering was with the the recent changes in the Arctic. We are seeing a change in the global shift in terms of weather and patterns. And this last year, we got to see a taste of what that's going to do for some areas like Galena and, you know, other communities that are seeing massive issues with erosion and other changes that are happening because of maybe a greater thaw or whatnot. What do you see as being the state's approach to these disaster potentials that we are going to be seeing along with the future economic growth? It seems that, you know, you can't take one without the other when it comes to the change in the weather in the Arctic.
Oh, it's a monumental task. As you know, we've seen what happened in Kotlik, you know, the way that they had to deal with that late season storm, just communities that have to deal with erosion. Unfortunately, I think it's a natural process that we're going to just have to adapt to. And, you know, for example, if the entire ice cap melted, the National Geographic has predicted that, you know, the rise in sea level could be, you know, dozens and dozens of feet higher than it is now. And, you know, just... We live in a world that is changing, and how can you change the climate? You can't change it in a snap of a finger, and so humans will just have to adapt, unfortunately, to whatever the conditions are.
Yeah. Do you feel Alaska is ready for this? I mean, it's happened so quickly. You can only be so prepared. But do you see us maybe taking the steps that need to be taken in order to be getting more prepared?
Well, I hope so. First, we have to recognize it. First, then we have to accept it. And then we have to try to work toward possible solutions. But that takes a lot of conversation. It's going to take a lot of convincing by a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, of course, it's going to take a lot of money, and where does that come from?
Yeah.
Federal government is low on cash, and we're struggling to develop our resources so that we can have our own income. So many things are pulling at us from several different directions. So just the advantages of being a human, I guess, on this planet Earth.
It's quite an experience. You know, we do live in exciting times. Again, we're talking with Representative Bob Herron here. He represents the Aleutians East Borough along with the Bethel region and down the Aleutian chain for the Alaska State House of Representatives. Thank you again for coming on here. As we wind down, is there anything that you'd like to say while you have the people in Sandpoint? We also represent King Cove, a community that you were able to visit, and our reach goes down to Cold Bay and beyond. Is there anything that you'd like to say before we end the conversation?
Well, I guess as we speak, Sally Jewell is making her announcement on her decision on Eisenbeck.
Mm.
And so it was scheduled for 3 o'clock, or maybe it's 3 o'clock this afternoon. Let me double check that. I just got an email saying that. I believe, let me double check here.
Yeah, this was an opportunity for obviously Eisenbeck, you know, for the King Cove to Cold Bay Road. Sally Jewell, who's the Secretary for Interior, has the final say on whether or not this change will be allowed to happen, where a small parcel of land will go to the people in King Cove in order for them to complete the road through the Eisenbeck Refuge.
Yes, it's the official Washington, D.C. Sally Jewell announcement. I apparently was at 11 o'clock Alaska time, 3 o'clock Eastern, and she's already talking to the mayor and Della, and it's not going to be a very Merry Christmas, as I understand.
Okay. Well, and that...
You'll have to... I could forward this. I think there is an official announcement. Oh, no, the King Cove just released their press release, and they expressed indignation following Sally Jewell's decision to deny the land exchange, which would have granted them the access. So she said no.
And that's such a massive disappointment, you know, especially considering the fact that there was so much money spent already on this road. You know, I think that it's not just the fact that they're going to stop this from happening, is that so much had already happened to make this. You know, they just need a small little parcel of land to complete the road. You know, as the representative for the area, what are your feelings about that, and what's the next step, do you think?
I don't know. I just, it's,
this is a new topic for you.
A Grinch and to give out coals for Christmas is really sad. And, you know, it just that she's more interested in protecting a bird than she is in protecting human life. And the issue that I have with that is the Department of the Interior has the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and the federal government has a trust responsibility with Alaska Natives. Granted, there are non-natives that live in King Cove, but you know, we should protect our animals, but we should also protect the citizens of the United States. And so, I concur with Mayor Mack. This is devastating, but it's not over. We're not going to give up until we get that road in. And I agree with him because it just didn't make sense. But again, I'm very disappointed.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, with a heavy heart, you know, I mean, the other comment that I would give to the listeners is I wish that everybody and their families has a safe and happy holidays, and look forward to working with the region in 2014.
Well, thank you so much. We wish you a very Merry Christmas as well. Hope that you have a good holiday season. And again, Mr. Heron, thank you so much for coming on the air and sharing your thoughts and just kind of giving us a sneak peek at what's to come for this upcoming legislative session. We're all really excited about it. And hopefully we can get you on the air again sometime, maybe afterwards, just kind of get your thoughts on the post-session.
Okay, yeah, or we could talk during session, but I look forward to those conversations.
Oh, great. Thank you so much. And again, good luck. Have a great holiday season with you and your family. And thank you again.
Thank you, Austin.
All right. Have a good day, sir.
You